I call the Community and Regional Affairs Committee meeting to order at 8:04 a.m. on Tuesday, March 20th. Joining today, we have Representative Tallarico and Representative Drummond. We're joined in the audience by Representative Gren and myself, Co-Chair Parrish. Our staff today are Lori Rowland from House Records, Patrick Courtnish, my committee aide, and Eileen Keem on teleconference. Will all present please silence their cell phones? We have one item on the agenda today, House Bill 385, an act relating to multi-line telephone systems. We're joined by Representative Sadler at 8:05. This is the first hearing on the resolution with the resolution sponsor of HB 385, Representative Gren, and your staff, Shia Siegert. Please come to the testifier table. Please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. For the record, my name is Representative Jason Gren, representing District 22 in Anchorage, Alaska. And with me is my staff, Shay Siegert.
Sorry, Shay.
He's been called worse, don't worry. with your indulgence, Chair, I'd like to read a statement.
Please.
Right. Well, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee, thank you for hearing House Bill 385 this morning. House Bill 385 focuses around two main ideas: giving emergency responders an ability to get to an emergency as fast as possible and making the ability to receive an emergency response more accessible to everyday Alaskans. Enhanced 911, also known as E911, is a service that automatically displays the telephone number and physical location of the 911 caller on the emergency operator's screen. E911 is crucial in circumstances where the caller cannot communicate their whereabouts, as it ensures that the operator is still able to send emergency response services to the correct location. With the advancement of new technologies, E911 has significantly improved the effective delivery of critical public safety and emergency response services across the state. There is a large segment of E911 end users in Alaska using multi-line telephone systems, referred to by the acronym of MLTS. These systems do not have the same level of E911 safety protections as a small business or residential systems. A very close-to-home example of MLTS are the phones that are in every office in this building. Multi-line telephone systems connect dozens, hundreds, and thousands of extension phones to a central computerized telephone switchboard. MLTSs are frequently used by government agencies, banks, hotels, healthcare facilities, and schools. When individuals call 911 from a phone in a multi-line telephone system, that system may only relay the physical street address of the facility's main building or the address of the building in which the MLTS is located. Take, for example, our Capitol building. With the passage of House Bill 385, when an individual calls 911 from my office in the Capitol, the dispatch would be displayed what is called the automatic location information. What will be displayed to them almost immediately upon the answering of my call is room 418 in the building located at 120 4th Street, Juneau, Alaska. Currently, an E911 call would only show up as 120 4th Street, Juneau, Alaska, without the room number. This efficient process gives the 911 dispatch the ability to immediately ask me about the emergency situation rather than where the emergency is happening, as they will already have that information. With the fiscal climate being what we all know it is, we as legislators need to find cost-neutral ways for our most important safety departments to act efficiently. I believe it is our responsibility to give them the tools to do so, and we believe that is exactly what House Bill 385 aims to do. And now, again, with the indulgence of the chair, I can have my staff, Shay, go over the summary of changes from the original piece of legislation to the committee substitute for 385 that you have in front of you this morning.
Please proceed.
And again, this is Shay Siegert with Representative Jason Gren's office. So there's two main substantive changes in the bill. Lines 4 through 8 in Section 1 on page 1, the changes to this provision provide for an opt-in mechanism for municipalities to enforce implementation of the following provisions in this bill after January 1, 2019. The mechanism by which they would opt in, municipalities, would be by ordinance. And so this was to provide flexibility in regulation and regulating and enforcing this this bill and this statute in each municipality across the state. The second change is in Section 2, and it was in subpoint F in the original drafting of the legislation. In the committee substitute, lines 17 through 18, this change removes the Regulatory Commission of Alaska from adopting regulations to implement and enforce the provisions of this bill. The reason for doing so is we read in reading through a docket that was open for 10 years from 2005 to 2015 with the RCA R-5-05. We found that one large conflict that they were running into was finding a waiver provision for the state as a whole that wouldn't put burden on one community versus the benefit of another. And so we decided to make it completely under the provisions of local control and give municipalities the flexibility to regulate and enforce the provisions of this bill. Those are the two big substantive changes, and we have Ledge Legal on the phone for the reordering, or to speak to the reordering of the other provisions of this bill. If you look at version A versus version D, you'll find that things have been moved around, and I believe that Emily Nauman with Ledge Legal can speak to those changes.
She is on the line. Ms. Nauman, are you with us?
Yes.
Would you like to add any comment to what Mr. Siegert has already said?
For the record, this is Emily Nauman with Legislative Legal. Chair Parrish, no, I don't have any additional comments.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee for the bill's sponsor? Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Representative Wren, what currently would be keeping a municipality or borough or another government entity from providing this enhanced 911 service?
It is our understanding that municipalities do not have the requisite authority to enforce and implement E911, and keeping in mind that enforcing implementation means them passing an ordinance saying if you have an MLTS system in your building, it is required that you have this ability and this capability to provide an automatic location information point for each phone that's in that MLTS system. And if I may, I would like to put that question to Emily as well. And maybe have her draft up an answer as well outside of the committee just for accuracy.
Thank you.
Ms. Snowman, did you hear the question?
Yes, I did.
Would you care to respond?
Sure. For the record, this is Emily Nauman with Legislative Legal. And I agree with Shay's comments that it can be beneficial for a municipality to have explicit statutory authority for this type of ordinance in terms of avoiding ambiguity about whether the municipality may enact such an ordinance or enforce an ordinance.
Ms. Nauman, a question of my own. Is it correct that at present home rule municipalities would have the authority to put such an ordinance into place, but other sorts of municipalities might not have that authority?
You know, I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head, but I'd be happy to look into it for you if you'd like.
Yep. If it wouldn't be too much trouble. Thank you.
Sure.
Are there any further questions for the bill's sponsor?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Representative Gren, can you tell us a little bit about the history of 911 in Alaska, when it kicked in, how far the reach is, just some general background?
Representative Gren.
Thank you.
Or Mr. Siegert.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, are you asking for a history of 911 or the history of Representative Hawker's bill, House Bill 249, that established enhanced 911 systems in Alaska? I'm just asking to the specificity of history that you're looking for.
Through the chair, the former.
Representative Sadler.
I'm sure I can toss that to, I will, through the chair, contact John Rockwell, the director of 911 services, and get a markup of exactly what you're asking for, and have him give a better answer than me.
Just looking for just a general history. How long has 911, not enhanced, but just regular old 911, been operative in Alaska, and what's the reach? Not specifically the state's system, just general information about the system you're purporting to modernize or update.
Representative Gren, do you have anything further to add?
No, not at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further questions for the bill's sponsor or his staff?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And through the chair, is 911 mandated by the federal government or by the state? And is it mandated or is it solely optional at this point?
Representative Gren or Mr. Siegert?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I believe that it is operated by the state. Provisions can regulate it from the state. Municipalities actually implement it with their 911 dispatch. There are certain regulations in federal law and federal regulation, as well as there are state regulations, as well as there are municipal regulations relating to 911. So there are three bodies that can regulate specific parts of 911 systems and how the access to those are implemented.
Okay, following up. So there's federal law requiring under which there are federal regulations, there is state law requiring under which there are state regulations, and there's municipal ordinances requiring 911 services under which there are regulations. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, to the best of my knowledge, and okay. I can look for a more precise answer to that question as well.
Thank you. Following up a different...
A separate question?
Yes.
Representative Sadler.
Who's likely to take advantage of this of the legislation to allow enhanced 911? I know you can't predict. You know, you don't have a crystal ball there that I can see. But who is likely to be the most the first implementer of this?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, we've received word from the Fairbanks Borough that they're in support of this bill and would implement it pretty much immediately. We've also received off the record, I'll save that for the next committee hearing, but people who would benefit from this through the chair, Representative Sadler, are people who may not have the ability to verbally speak over the phone. Every Alaskan would benefit from this provision. Children who can't explain maybe where they're at, what building they're at in the Captain Cook, or what room they're at in the Captain Cook, but they can explain exactly what they're seeing happen in front of them. So they wouldn't need to explain where exactly they are, and dispatch wouldn't need to use valuable time in these emergency situations in trying to delineate what building and what room the emergency is happening in. They would just have to find out exactly how much of an emergency it is, so that they can go through their normal processes in sending a police officer or EMT or emergency response person to the situation and location.
Okay. Following up,
Representative Sadler.
Thank you for the sponsor. On page two, the sections two lays out some fairly specific requirements in the statute requiring that a sign must be posted near telephones under a system that is exempt under this, requiring not more than 5 feet in contrasting colors. My question is, why would you put that in the statute and not leave it to regulations to have that kind of, you know, last mile worth of detail?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, we decided to put that in there simply because we wanted to be as specific as we could with the office and unit and building number. Specifically, so in Section 1, there's a grandfather's clause that says if this is going to, the intent of it is if there is going to be an overly burdensome cost on somebody who is going to upgrade their MLTS system solely because of this provision, we said that there's a grandfather's clause. So until you upgrade your MLTS system, you will need to follow these provisions, and so since they don't have the ability to give an automatic location information point, they would need to provide a very visible and very readable postage. And this actually stems from a case in Texas. And with the chair's indulgence, I can go into an explanation of that case.
Please.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I'm not so much interested in the my question was specifically to why you want to put that in statute when I notice on page 4, lines 18 and 19, you give the Regulatory Commission of Alaska regulatory authority. So my question is, why would you not leave those kind of specificity, that kind of specificity to the RCA regulations as opposed to stating the 5 feet, the contrasting colors, et cetera, in statute?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, we believe that it's important enough to put it into statute to have exact information as to prevent any delay in having the emergency response respond to the emergency at hand, and we believe that this is the best way to do so. Also, beyond the regulation of this specific postage, or any further regulation would be up to the municipality. We just believe that it would be important enough to put into statute.
Mr. Siegert, what was the background case? You mentioned one in Texas that was the impetus.
Yes, sir. So Carrie Hunt, a mother of a young daughter, had recently split up with her husband. She and her young daughter were staying in a hotel. Her estranged husband came in and allegedly beat her to a state where she could not call 911 on her own. So the responsibility of calling 911 and getting the emergency responders there in a timely fashion was left up to her very young daughter. The daughter was not able to reach 911 because the hotel did not have a postage as the one that is being referred to, explaining exactly how to reach the 911 dispatch. The daughter was not able to reach 911, and consequently, unfortunately, Ms. Carrie Hunt passed away. Now, if this legislation would have, we are not saying that if this legislation would have been in place, it would have saved this person's life, but nationally there has been a movement towards implementing these sorts of legislation since the Carrie Hunt case. And through this case, I think that you can see the impetus and the importance of legislation like this.
Follow up.
Thank you. Follow up, okay. Representative Sadler.
So for the sponsor, through the chair, so you believe it's important for folks to be able to call for help regardless of their ability maybe to communicate clearly?
Through the chair.
I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
I thought I didn't even see your lips move.
Sorry. No, I think that's through the chair, Representative Sadler. That's really the intent of this is allowing large office buildings, universities, hospitals, just where seconds and minutes matter in an emergency situation. We believe if we can get additional information to emergency responders, that's critical information. Obviously, where you are. Anything we can do to get that to them faster is vital public safety need, and I think this 385 is a good start.
Right. So to clarify, following up,
Representative Sutton.
So I want to make a point of this. So people who, like the case you just described, sir, about the child who was not able to communicate clearly, it's important to let those who really can't communicate clearly, might be in a disaster situation, might be stressed, might have the adrenaline reaction. So people that cannot communicate clearly, to give them the ability to make a phone call and ask for help is one of the goals of this bill. Is that correct?
I through the chair, Representative Sadler, I would agree. I think, we gave the example of even our own Capitol building. If, my children were here last week, if they picked up, they know how to call 911, but they wouldn't know my office number. This would greatly assist in a situation like that.
Follow up.
Thank you, Representative Gren. Follow up, Representative Sadler.
Would you have to have a separate location for each of your offices? The left wing, the east wing, the back 40.
through the chair, Representative Sadler. I hope if they found the room, they'd get to me pretty quick, regardless of
within hours.
Yes,
it'd certainly be much faster than simply showing up at the building and hoping. Representative Drummond.
Just a comment. I noticed in the last couple of years, staying in a hotel room and trying to decipher their telephone system when there is not a panic situation, I have actually resorted to calling the front desk using my cell phone because I could not figure out what sequence of numbers they required for me to dial the front desk on the phone, which is often poorly designed. It's dark. The type is very small, and in order to figure out that you have to dial, perhaps have to dial 9 or 1 or some other prefix mm-hmm. before you dial somebody else's room number, for example, or to reach the front desk or to reach room service or whatever. So I think it's a really good idea to make it quick, simple, and universal among all communication devices. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, that Representative Drummond's question raises another line of questioning. What is the status of if I call 911 on my cell phone? Is there any kind of enhancement that identifies my location to the dispatch center?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I believe we have somebody on the line who would be able to answer that better than I would.
On the line at present, we have Emily Nauman, Jill Dolan, and David Gibbs.
I believe David Gibbs should be able to answer that.
All right. And we do have Mr. Gibbs available as well for invited testimony. Mr. Gibbs, would you care to answer the question?
Yes. Again, my name is David Gibbs. I'm the Emergency Operations Director with the Fairbanks Darstock Borough. And the answer is yes. The municipalities that have implemented the enhanced 911 service generally also have the ability to receive location information from cellular phones. And there's a variety of technologies that are employed to allow public safety answering points or 911 centers to receive that information.
So just to clarify, I'm going to talk slowly back. So if I make a 911 phone call from a cell phone, at least in Fairbanks, the emergency responders will have a tag on my location. Is that correct?
Generally speaking, yes. It really depends on the cellular coverage that's available. But, yes, generally speaking, within the urban cores of Fairbanks, Anchorage, Juneau, the Mat-Su, Kenai, they'll be able to see your location information.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any further questions for the bill's sponsor or his staff at this time? Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm certainly not a technology expert at all, but I was just wondering about, with some of the new systems that are installed and everything, and the potential, if we move forward on this, the cost per unit or per system or anything, has any of that been looked into? And it seems like to me, and I can't seem to shake my memory loose here, but it seems like several municipalities have adopted kind of an E911 thing, and there were fees involved where there might be is there any, I guess, when folks go to do this, is there a funding source that might be available to help defer the cost to upgrade these? It seems like to me there was at one point in time. I don't know if that's still available via the federal government.
Mr. Siegert. Or Representative
Representative Tallarico, we can only really speak to the numbers of how much it would actually cost. As to the funding source, at this time I do not know. I can find out, though. And
Okay, thank you. And say actual cost for a system, do you have any numbers there?
Through the chair, Representative Tallarico, actually the cost is actually, it's when we started looking into this, lower than at least I thought. Cost can range from zero. A technician of the just the effort when they're upgrading their system to $25 per device. So if you have 100 rooms in a hotel that you're upgrading, $25 each room, $2,500 total. A small price to pay, hopefully, for minutes in an emergency situation.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. I just want to probe this through the chair, Representative Gren. So you're saying that you think it would cost about $25 per unit. And so if there was a hospital, hotel, whatever, with 100 units, that would be $25,000, if my math is correct?
Representative Crown.
Without my calculator.
A zero plus or minus, okay. but that's what you're saying, okay. So So there would be some, there would be a significant cost possibly to people implementing this. I understand that having it grandfathered in means going forward, but technology has changed frequently. So that was a question I think I asked Mr. Morgan yesterday, was the cost per, you know, when the requirement comes up, when someone upgrades their phone system, you know, what that cost would be. So your best estimate is $25 per handset or per location?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Sadler, up to $2,500, depending on the software, the phone system that you're using. I think it depends. So, again, 100 units at $25, $2,500 would be the cost. And, again, for example, you know, hotel in downtown Anchorage is upgrading their system. They've been grandfathered, not have this. They're upgrading this. $2,500 on top of their other capital upgrades, I think would probably be worth it to ease their people staying there, for knowing that they'd have a great public safety device really in their in each and every hotel room. $2,500 for that for 100 rooms, by estimate would be the correct answer.
So their follow up.
So Representative Sadler.
So if they there's often a cascading effect where radios, telephones, computer systems go from when they're the first introduced high-tech, leading-edge stuff, kind of heads on down the path. So something might be installed in the Hilton 1 year, 5 years later might appear in the Mush Inn or the Merrill Field Airport. So if someone wanted to install a new telephone system that did not have it, and they were buying a used system, would this apply, or would there be an exemption for using a used system?
Mr. Siegert.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, so there's your question has two parts. So actually, there's recently federal law signed into law by President Trump about 3 weeks ago, Kerry's Law, and a provision of that law holds that after 2020, any MLTS system sold or manufactured in the United States will have to have the ability to use E911, enhanced 911 provisions. So after 2020, the question of buying a used telephone system in essence becomes an impossibility through the legality of it. But with people there, I also revert back to section one of the bill. If someone does not, someone has just upgraded their phone, or someone has upgraded their phone 10 years ago and it's working well, and they want to keep with it and don't want to incur this cost right away, then they can still have that phone, and until they upgrade their whole phone system again, they do not need to do this. And that's in the grandfather's clause in section one of the bill.
Okay. And probing that?
Follow up.
Thank you. So did you say after 2020 any MTS manufactured in the United States? Or manufactured or sold in the United States? I didn't hear that.
Through the chair, it is my understanding that it's manufactured or sold.
Okay, because I know China produces equipment. You know, Germany does. Okay. And following up on that again, so...
Follow up?
Actually, a couple more lines. Who determines what consists of an upgrade? I mean, at what point is the upgrade threshold reached?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, could you repeat that question?
Sure. So the requirement to include the enhanced 911 service would kick in when a operator, a business or whatever, would upgrade. Is there any kind of standard for what constitutes an upgrade?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, when they upgrade the entire MLTS system.
Okay.
And going back to your prior question, If I may read, this is from House Resolution 582 in the 115th Congress of the United States of America, subsection B, system installation, management, and operation. A person engaged in the business of installing, managing, or operating multi-line telephone systems may not install, manage, or operate for use in the United States such a system unless such system is configured such that a user may directly initiate a call to 911 from any station equipped with dialing facilities without dialing any additional digit code, prefix, or postfix, so on and so forth.
Okay, good. And that's the 115th Congress, and my memory is kind of bad, so what date's that?
That is this Congress, through the chair, Representative Sadler.
and I appreciate the indulgence through in conversation. So my other question would be, would this law apply to Joint Base Elmendorf Richardson, Fort Wainwright, and other military bases that, who might have their own federal standards for communication and might appreciate or not appreciate the state imposing their standards on them?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, if they have an MLTS system, yes, sir, it would.
Actually, that's in the event that the municipality in which they belong.
In the event that the municipality to which they belong has passed an ordinance, to the best of my knowledge, and if that's incorrect, I can correct that off the.
Mr. Chair, go brief at ease.
Representative Sadler, at ease. I'll note at this time that we have not yet adopted the CS. However, it's the will of the chair that we should do so. And I'm willing to entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee adopt the CS for House Bill 385, numbered 30-LS, as in Sam, 1456. /D as in dog.
Is there any discussion? Are there any questions about the summaries of changes provided to us by Representative Gren? Briefly, they provide for an opt-in mechanism for municipalities, and they remove the RCA, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, from the responsibility of adopting regulations to implement and enforce the provisions of the bill.
It does.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I did not have the CS in front of me, and I had taken some comfort from the fact that in the version I was looking at, that the RCA did have regulatory authority. And if I can fumble through papers for a second, I want to make sure. So that has been removed from the CS, is that correct?
Representative Gren or Mr. Siegert?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler. Yeah. Yes, sir, it is correct. And going back to the summary of changes, the reasoning for that is that every provision, close to every provision in this bill was taken from the recommendations from the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. During a 10-year docket open from 2005 to 2015, the docket number is R-5-05, and what it was looking to do was giving municipalities the ability to control this locally, because the RCA found that there was a conflict in providing a statewide regulation that didn't provide a lot of burden for one municipality while providing some benefit for another, and there are differing municipalities, as you know, in this state, and each one could implement this on a different basis, providing for local control.
Thank you, Mr. Siegert. Representative Sadler, do you have the committee substitute before you now?
Yes, I do.
Good. Are there any further questions on the proposed adoption of the committee substitute? In that case, hearing no objection, the committee substitute 30-LS1.
This conference may be recorded.
56 /D is adopted as the working document. Are there any further questions for the bill's sponsor at this time? Brief at ease. I call the Community and Regional Affairs Committee back to order. Are there any further questions for the bill's sponsor or his staff at this time? Seeing none, thank you both. We'll move next to invited testimony. And we will begin with Jill Dolan of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Ms. Dolan, did you want to offer any testimony at this time?
Thank you, Chair Parrish. For the record, this is Jill Dolan from the Fairbanks North Star Borough. If I could, I would just like to respond to a question that was raised regarding the home rule powers and whether or not a home rule municipality would be distinguished from, for instance, Fairbanks, which is a second-class borough. So one of the specific restrictions in Title 29 on home rule powers is actually related to enhanced 911 systems. So the way the hierarchy of the law works, we do have federal laws and FCC rules providing the universal 911 calling number, and those rules often require carriers to deliver those 911 calls to our specific public safety answering point. And then it's up to the state whether or not enhanced 911, such as we do here in Fairbanks, is done at a statewide level or a local level. And so we do have the local program through that Title 29 legislation, and that applies equally to home rule or any other type of organized municipality. So I don't think there is a distinction right now between the two. This is the enabling legislation for all of us to implement our enhanced 911 systems at the local level.
Thank you.
And that's what I just wanted to clarify. So thank you for the opportunity, and thanks to Representative Gren and his office for the excellent explanation of this legislation.
Thank you, Ms. Dolan. Are there any questions for Ms. Dolan at this time?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair. Ms. Dolan, you made reference to your enhanced 911 services in Fairbanks. Did I mishear you? Do you actually currently have enhanced 911 services?
We do. We have an enhanced 911 system here in Fairbanks. What we don't have is the specific legislation requiring the multi-line telephone system operators to provide that specific location information that this legislation would actually implement.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Dolan. Representative Sadler?
Yes, and through the chair, Ms. Dolan. First, what's your title with the borough?
I'm the borough attorney.
Okay. And just if you could speak generally about what the borough's experience has been, any glitches or any hiccups or any smooth sailing that happened when you implemented your current 911 system, enhanced 911 system?
Ms. Dolan.
Thank you. Mr. Gibbs may actually be in a better position to answer that question for you. I can tell you that we have encountered problems with service providers, one specific service provider providing us enhanced 911 information when we transitioned to a new system several years ago. And we did have to seek court action and RCA action in order to resolve that issue. But it is since resolved, and typically speaking, I think the system works well as far as the delivery of the location information to our, we have a 911 call center. That's a central location answering point for 911 calls.
Okay. I appreciate that. At this point, the discussion still is kind of theoretical, so the fact that Fairbanks has actually done so in part is helpful.
Yeah, and there are other enhanced 911 systems throughout the state, Anchorage, Kenai, Juneau, Matsu. We all have enhanced 911 systems. Really, the enhanced in the enhanced 911 means the delivery of specific location information along with the call.
Okay. And curious,
Follow up, Representative Sadler?
This appears to have come through Fairbanks, and just help me understand, maybe you just guys are fashion forward when it comes to technology, but how is it the North Star Borough has been in the lead in trying to push for the E911 for multi-line systems?
Ms. Dolan.
Thank you very much for that question. I think that credit goes probably to Mr. Gibbs. Mr. Gibbs is our emergency operations director. He's very on top of what's happening in the industry and looking at what other states are doing. And it's something that's actually been on his list for years now is something that needs to be resolved because of the issue that we had with the current legislation and state law that kind of stalled out in the RCA process. So I think he could possibly speak more to the reasons behind it, but I think that's how we ended up kind of at the forefront of it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Dolan. We'll next go to Mr. Gibbs, unless there are any further questions for Ms. Dolan. Seeing none. Mr. Gibbs, are you with us?
I am, and thank you very much, Chair Parrish. Good morning, and members of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee. Again, my name for the record is David Gibbs, and I'm the Emergency Operations Director for the Borough. As part of my duties, I serve as the 911 System Administrator for the Borough. I should add that the Fairbanks Northstar Borough supports the committee substitute of HB 385, and actually our Borough Assembly has identified this issue as one of our legislative priorities. I also would like to thank Representative Gren for providing an excellent introduction. And also there's a very good frequently asked questions document in, I believe, the packet that you have. In the interest of time, most of what I was going to say has already been covered. I did want to mention that in our community, multi-line telephone systems are used by a variety of occupancies, both government and private, including the University of Alaska Fairbanks. We have numerous hotels. The borough and city government, borough and city governments all use multi-line telephone systems. We have big box stores and schools. One of the issues that we've identified is that we don't have good location information for the actual locations of a lot of these devices that are used to access 911. And I believe in your packet, we provided you with a sample, a graphic, that literally we have hundreds, if not thousands, of telephone devices from the University of Alaska that resolve, if a 911 call is placed, the address resolves to a single switch location at 1054 University Avenue. This actually, as a matter of interest, also includes the Poker Flats Rocket Range, which is approximately 30 miles away from that location. So we've had multiple, sort of the impetus for this legislation is we have had multiple examples of emergency responses or emergency responders being delayed because they were either dispatched to the wrong building in a large campus, or they had to embark on a prolonged search of a hotel floor while they're trying to locate a caller attempting to seek aid, either medical law or fire. One other thing, again, much of what I wanted to say has already been covered, so again, in the interest of time, one of the other things that I wanted to point out the benefit of this bill is that it does actually require that multi-line telephone system 911 information be located or be transmitted directly to the 911 call center and not to a security desk, which is what a lot of other places do. Security desks may be attended by an individual that's either ill-trained or ill-equipped to handle the call. So this is a very good thing. And I really want to stress the importance of requiring multi-line telephone system operators to ensure that their systems will allow a caller to dial 911 without an additional prefix, such as an 8 or 9. And I think that a number of the committee members have already pointed out the benefit to this. And very quickly, there were a variety of questions, mostly from Representative Sadler. I did want to speak to 911 has, enhanced 911 has been around in Fairbanks since the late 1980s. But I should point out that even basic 911 has not yet been deployed statewide. There are places in the Northwest Arctic, villages in particular, that do not even have a basic level of 911 service. Many local governments, and I think Ms. Dolan went through the list, have employed enhanced 911 systems. I wanted to also talk about who would the question about who would implement this. Anyone that is already providing enhanced 911 will probably be taking a good look at implementing a enhanced 911 for multi-line telephone systems ordinance. I did speak with Anchorage Police, and I think they're going to be willing to testify, but they too are interested. I also wanted to really very quickly touch on the cost. The cost ranges from zero, if you don't count the technician time to actually. In our 911 system, somebody could actually enter the information directly into our 911 location database, and it ranges all the way to the cost of a switch, an enhanced switch, which we estimate to be approximately $3,500, and to the very, very large multi-line telephone systems. A lot of companies employ third-party service providers, so depending on the size of the facility, and the number of access lines, or the number of devices that access the system, the costs can be fairly large. that's really all that I, again, much of what I wanted to say has already been covered, so I really wanted to thank you for your opportunity to speak to you this morning, and I really do hope that you will support HB 385, and I'll take any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gibbs. I see a question from Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Mr. Gibbs, when you, your last point there that could be, for large companies employing this, it could be pretty large. Can you put some parameters on how much pretty large is cost?
I don't know, actually. We have, there are companies that interface with our number one system that actually aggregate from multiple companies in a single database. They establish a connection to our 911 center. So basically these large companies would subscribe to this third-party service to provide 911 enhanced location information to a PSAP. So I really don't know. I would assume it's on a that would be on a per-device basis.
Okay, fair enough.
So I can't really estimate. I'm sorry.
Fair enough. Follow-up,
Settler.
So, again, I think you're a good source to answer some of these questions, as was indicated before. So somebody must keep the database of locations, including, as you talked about, the Poker Flats, the university system. So somebody someplace has to keep a location list updated. Is that database maintained at each municipal level? Is that a statewide database? Again, this is kind of a basic question about how 911 operates. Can you help illuminate the members of the committee?
Absolutely, certainly. So for wireline 911, which is your basically your desk phone or your residential commercial telephone, that's basically maintained by the telephone company providing service. So we have an automated process where as they do a move, you know, somebody might move, if they add a customer or they delete a customer, that information is updated daily through an automated process. So we receive service orders into our 911 system. It automatically makes the changes, and, you know, life goes on. With regard to multi-line telephone systems, there's actually two databases. There's the database maintained by the operator, which they need to do because they need to know where each of the devices is located. And then it's getting that information into the 911 automatic location information database. That's kind of the crux of what we're doing here. Again, that could be done by them simply having an automated link, as we do with telephone companies, where they just daily provide their moves, adds, or deletes to us. Or they could go in periodically and make changes on smaller systems. They may not have many changes, so we could give them authorization to actually access our system and update their records.
Gotcha. Okay, and follow-up. So the 911 database, that's a municipality-by-municipality database. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Good. Thank you, sir.
Are there any further questions for Mr. Gibbs? Yeah, I have one. Mr. Gibbs, are you aware of any research which has correlated rates of positive or negative outcomes to emergency calls to the implementation of this? Are there any metrics which show, you know, in 80% of cases, you know, you're able to get to an emergency situation in a timely fashion if they've got the multi-line telephone system with E911 associated with it compared to, say, only 79% of the time? Are you aware of any research which looks at different jurisdictions which have put this into place?
So I'm only aware of anecdotal information. I am not aware of any performance metrics. There's lots of anecdotal information, but again, no performance metrics that I'm aware of.
Thank you. Well, I do tend to trust your anecdotes as well as those of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association, the Professional Firefighters Association, Fairbanks North Star Borough, of course, we've already touched on, and I believe the Juneau Fire Chief as well was going to chime in on the subject, so thank you.
Thank you.
Seeing no further questions, Ms. Wasserman, would you please come forward, put your name and affiliation on the record, and give your testimony?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Kathy Wasserman, Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League. First of all, I want to apologize to Representative Stadler. I'm a short timer, and my tolerance level has gone out the window, and I had surveyed my board on another bill, and they all went, so, sorry, sir. Anyway, the Alaska Municipal League is in favor of this bill. I sent a letter yesterday. I would first of all like to thank Representative Gren and Shea for mentioning local control three times in their original discussion on this bill. That is sort of our main thrust for any legislation that we support or don't support. We support both of these amendments especially. As the last speaker said, many communities in this state, I would say probably almost half of our organized municipalities do not even have 911 service. I know the community I'm from, we didn't have it. So we tried to get it, but because of all the rules and regulations on federal airwaves and the ability to do anything, you can't even get 911. So to require a community to opt out would be a lot of needless work on a place like Anaktuvuk Pass or Kobuk when they can't even get 911. So an opt-in is much, much smarter. And again, with the Regulatory Commission, it's much like the state faces with the federal government when you have one commission across the state, which tends to be, and I understand, focused on Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau. It tends to leave the other 160 communities kind of out in the back. So it's much easier if a issue like this is kept under local control. I would hope that one day we would not have to go through all of this to allow a municipality to do what they think is good and safe for their residents. That's just an aside. That's no one's fault. That's just the way our system works. But for right now, we are certainly in favor of this bill, and it's something that a community that can take advantage of it needs to be able to do so.
Thank you, Ms. Wasserman. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you again for your testimony. I don't have anyone else online to testify. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? I suppose I should properly say I hereby open public testimony.
Mr. Chair, so all the folks that have testified have been invited testifiers, is that correct?
That's correct. Seeing no one online and no one in the room to testify, I hereby close public testimony. If, however, someone watching would like to submit their comments, they can certainly submit them in email form, in writing, to my office directly, or they can even request that I reopen public testimony in the future. However, for the time being, I think we're good. We are going to set this bill aside for the time being. It'll be held over to our next meeting. Amendments are due for HB 385 Wednesday, March 21st by 4 p.m. and can be delivered to Grace Renee Singh or to Patrick Cornish, my committee staff. Our next meeting will be Thursday, March 22nd at 8 a.m. And Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is our first hearing of the bill, and so you're calling for amendments by 4 p.m. tomorrow. Given that this is the week the operating budget is due on the floor and there's lots of work by Legislative Legal, is that a fair deadline to give us to have amendments to this bill?
I tend to think so. If, however, you have a detailed amendment, I'd encourage you to work with the bill's sponsor. Okay. And I think we can probably find some accommodation.
Appreciate that. It's 31 hours from now, and as I say, there's hundreds of amendments stacked up in Legislative Legal, so I don't know which is going to get priority for the time, so I would hope you can be very flexible when it comes to meeting the deadline for amendments.
I've never failed to entertain amendments which have been offered, even one submitted over the deadline, as you may recall. Are there any further questions at this time? Seeing none, we are adjourned at 9 a.m.